I'm your host, John Rush, Rush to Reason, KLZ 560. Thank you all for joining us today. I do appreciate it very much. As it is typical for us on Thursdays at this hour, Dr. Kelly Victory joining us, as well as Steve House, ladies first. Welcome, Dr. Victory. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me, as always, John. I'm calling in from sunny Southern California.
It's not here.
People's Republic.
It's snowing here. It's all right.
Well, I'm heading back tomorrow morning early, I'll be back to it.
Be careful. Steve House, are you in state, or where are you?
I am not in state at the moment, and I am always second to Kelly Victory. I noticed that today when Charlie called me. He's like, Kelly's on the line. I'm like, why is Kelly always on the line before they call me? What is this?
Ladies first.
I guess that's true.
No,
right?
I call in.
Yeah, good point. Yes, and Dr. Kelly's always on time. I will give her that. All right, Dr. Kelly, real quick, before we get into some of the other topics that I've got for today, you sent an email to Steve and I just a few minutes before the show today. I read through it briefly. Talk about what's in that email, Steve. I want to get your comments on it as well. But basically, we have a new COVID-19 national coordinator, do we not?
Yes. President Biden has appointed Dr. Ashish Jha to be the new COVID coordinator, or the COVID czar, as his previous guys just stepped down. The reason this is concerning to me, actually the reasons are multiple. This guy has a long and storied history of being someone who espouses sort of the social determinants of health rather than the science of health. He clearly has a political agenda, from what I've seen, based on his actions throughout the pandemic. People who have followed him or listened to him on the mainstream media may recall he's the person who called Senator Ron Johnson a, quote, snake oil salesman.
Right.
Or attempting to suggest that there might be some early treatment options available other than ones being hawked by the federal government, medications like ivermectin, for example. And Dr. Jha called him a snake oil salesman, which is, as you know, far from the truth. Whether or not you individually want to take ivermectin to treat or prevent COVID is up to you, a discussion between you and your doctor.
Right.
But the idea that he would dismiss the reams of scientific evidence that supports those of us who do believe that there's some value to using ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine or steroids or other medications really is preposterous, and certainly is not based on medical science. It's based on political science.
He's also one of those individuals that wanted a vaccine mandate for air travel back in October.
Absolutely, and I guarantee he still feels that way. He is somebody who's been fighting against getting rid of the mask mandate on airplanes. He thinks we should keep that in place. He thinks that children should be vaccinated and there should be mandates for even young children to have a vaccine to go to school. He believes you should be vaccinated or have to be vaccinated in order to travel on public transportation, including airplanes. So this guy really is sort of the far end of the spectrum. And I am fearful that with him ensconced in the lead position as the director or coordinator of COVID going forward, that he won't even deem to call it an endemic issue. He will continue to call it a pandemic and continue on with the fear-mongering and doubling down on some of these mandates that we know not only are not necessary, have not been effective, but are in fact significantly harmful to vast percentages of the population.
Steve, I want to get your opinion not only of that, but follow up to what Dr. Kelly said a moment ago, where we can look around the globe now and more data just continues to come out. Some of the countries that have the highest vaccination rates in the world are now also experiencing some of the highest, not only cases of COVID, but even some of the mortality rates are going back up in some of those particular areas. Talk about not only the new coordinator, but that as well.
Well, I think he's a COVID coordinator, right? So there's a part of me that looks at all this data, and I was looking at some of the data today, and Kelly, I could be wrong about this, but it appears to me the more people that have been vaccinated in the country, the higher the excess deaths seem to be. So places where they haven't been vaccinated, it isn't as high of an excess death, or it certainly isn't a big delta between the number of people who died from COVID and the total number of deaths. And so, you know, I look at that and I think to myself, well, if you're the COVID coordinator, then the pandemic has been, you know, essentially because of COVID, and you see in the United States somewhere between 300,000 and 900,000 excess deaths beyond COVID, I look at it and go, that ought to be your top priority, right?
Right.
I mean, shouldn't your top priority be to figure out why people are dying during a pandemic and why there are so many excess deaths? It should be on the news every night. It should be his number one priority. I'm going to figure out why so many people have died during the COVID era who didn't die of COVID, because it has to be related.
There's no question, and you are interpreting the data exactly correctly, Steve. The data don't lie. It's irrefutable that countries that have the highest vaccination rates also have, number one, the highest excess mortality rates compared to countries that have low vaccination rates, and they are suffering from increased incidence of severe cases of COVID. So you've got two things going on. It appears that countries that are highly vaccinated, places like the United Arab Emirates, South Korea, the UK, Israel, places that have significantly higher vaccination rates than the United States, are having big problems with excess deaths from things other than COVID. So it remains to be seen whether or not we can prove it is actually from the vaccine itself. But as you point out, it sure as heck is somebody's job at the CDC, the FDA, or this, you know, the guy who's running the COVID response to look into it. That's what they should be doing. But instead, they cherry pick data. They find the one study that shows that ivermectin wasn't used for it. They find the one study that shows that more people were hospitalized who'd been vaccinated than not. They find the one study that says, you know, that something is or isn't effective, and they run with that rather than looking at the, you know, the propensity, the vast majority of the data, which shows something else. And they are not addressing all of the data that has come in from the Department of Defense, from life insurers, from health insurers in this country, saying that even in the United States, with our current vaccination rates, somewhere probably in the low 70% range, that we have massive upticks in the incidence of certain medical conditions, not the least of which are things like blood clots to the lung, blood clots to the brain, myocarditis, autoimmune issues, cancers, and things of that sort.
Right.
So, yes, that's what this guy should be prioritizing, but instead, he's prioritizing vaccine mandates for air travel.
Really felt like...
By the way,
go ahead, Steve, go ahead.
You know, the one thing I think that, because it's a political season,
right?
I would encourage candidates, you know, on both sides of the aisle to ask this question, to say, okay, guys, you know, there are a lot of excess deaths. I mean, the insurance, the CEO out of Indiana that was, you know, published by everybody saying, you know, he thinks it's between 15 or I guess it was 18 and 65. The numbers were pretty dramatic for excess deaths. I mean, these people don't normally die anywhere near this rate. And it was way over COVID. There's 352,000 people more than died of COVID in excess deaths. The candidates out there should be calling the question or calling for the HHS, FDA, especially CDC, to find out what happened. We need an explanation because, A, we could have another pandemic in a year or two. And if we did, we certainly don't want to do what we did here to end up with all those excess deaths. And or we certainly don't want to play out the vaccine the way we did, because now they're talking about a fourth shot,
right,
saying that the third shot doesn't work that well. And they're looking at entirely different vaccines. I mean, there's so much misinformation regarding it. I want to know what the answer is and why so many people died.
I've got questions coming. Go ahead, Kelly. Go ahead.
Let me say it's way worse, Steve, than them, quote, not investigating it. They are actively suppressing that data. You may recall that the thing that got me permanently banned from Twitter was actually posting the sworn testimony,
right,
of those Department of Defense physicians who were trying to bring this to light. So this is worse than the CDC, FDA, and federal government not investigating it. They are actively trying to silence,
yep,
those of us who dare, including the three of us on this show today. They're,
yep,
trying to silence those of us who would dare to bring this information into the public and would dare to go to our politicians and say, what gives? Look at this data. Somebody needs to be investigating it,
right,
and coming up with an answer to what the heck went on.
All right, guys, well, hold that. Go ahead. Steve, one last thought. Go ahead. We've got to take a break,
yeah,
but go ahead.
Just one last thought. I mean, you know, nearly a million people have died in the United States alone, according to the data. If a million people died, and then you look at all the things you tried, from masks to lockouts to, you know, social distancing to vaccines, what worked, if anything?
Good question. Good question. Guys, hold that thought. We'll come right back. Questions? I've got some text messages coming in already. Our text line, 307-200-8222. Again, 307-200-8222. Text us a question. I'll get that in front of Steve and Dr. Kelly here as soon as we come back. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Dr. Kelly, Victory with us. Steve House is with us as well today. All right, let's do this. Dr. Kelly, we'll start with you. Question just came in. Somebody actually I met at one of the seminars we had here recently. Could I ask you guys why we got to the policy that shots were not given by doctors or in their offices, but Dr. Kelly, they were given everywhere but there?
Great question. They did this largely to streamline or facilitate the ability to get massive amounts of product into the arms of millions of Americans. It is not unheard of. Obviously, we do allow, for example, pharmacists to give flu vaccines,
right.
For example. That is largely, and shingles vaccines. Most other vaccinations are, in fact, given in the office of your healthcare provider and are given either by the nurse or the PA or whoever is there in a medical setting. Because this was deemed to be such an emergency, they sidestepped that and allowed people to be, you know, rolling into the parking lot of the Costco, you know, rolling your window down and letting somebody whose credentials are completely unknown inject into your deltoid. I think it, frankly, went a long way to, while it made it more convenient, perhaps, for some people, because you didn't need to make an appointment and it was easy to get there, I think it caused a lot of vaccine hesitancy, frankly, because a lot of people, like this person asking the question, I think it becomes pretty apparent to people, like, wow, this doesn't feel that, you know, that awesome. This doesn't feel that well controlled. And then they tell you, now go park over there for 15 minutes and wait, so that if you have an anaphylactic reaction, you might have a chance in hell of somebody seeing that you're actually not breathing or having a medical problem. You know, it really doesn't give people a lot of confidence. But fundamentally, it was an attempt to be able to streamline the process, because otherwise they would never have been able to pull this off of getting hundreds of millions of Americans vaccinated in the time period that they did.
Steve, your thoughts?
Essentially the same thing. I mean, I you can do an assembly line if you have the space and the labor to do it. You can't do it in an assembly line in typical doctor's office. There's just, you know, too many people flowing through for other reasons, and it's not very big. And, you know, I think it's a distribution problem. That's really what it was. And then Kelly alluded to, you can't get 100 million people vaccinated unless you have a distribution channel to do it.
Right.
But the problem, one of the other problems, in addition to just overall vaccine hesitancy and you know, lack of accountability, is that one of the key and most critical concepts in medicine and healthcare is informed consent. And I would suggest to you that when you pull into that Costco parking lot or the convention center or wherever it was that so many people went and got vaccinated,
right,
you simply are not given adequate time to read the, quote, informed consent form, nor do you have the ability to ask the kinds of questions that you would, presumably, if you were in the office of your physician. So instead, you know, the idea of informed consent during this COVID vaccine initiative is laughable. People have no idea what they just injected into their body. They have no clue, and they weren't given adequate information to make an informed decision. So the idea that this was informed consent, I think, is ridiculous.
And yet we've now we're going to have somebody still in charge of the, what do you want to call it, the czar, the COVID czar, who feels more, I don't know about the last individual, they were pretty strong as well, but this one, given all of the credentials and where this particular individual has come from, this is almost a double down of what we've been through, Dr. Kelly.
Hey, absolutely, and that is precisely my concern, John, is that is going to be absolutely adamant about pushing the vaccines, pushing vaccine mandates. And again, I'm not anti-vaccine,
right,
but we have a mounting pile of bodies, first of all, that who have been injured by this vaccine. We do not have anywhere near the amount of data that we need for me or, frankly, anybody with integrity to be out there saying that this thing is safe. We do not have that data. And until we have, you know, long-term data, I'm talking about 36, 48, you know, 60-month data on things that let us have some sort of view into whether we are looking at fertility issues, autoimmune issues, neurologic issues, cardiac issues, you name it. I simply do not feel that it is safe to be giving this to everybody, particularly, once again, in children who have such a low risk from COVID as to really be approaching zero.
Oh, I agree.
So, John, one comment, and I kind of wanted to play off something Kelly said.
Sure.
Kelly, I know more doctors and nurses who haven't been vaccinated than almost any other single profession I've seen, maybe truck drivers and others not, but it still seems like there's a fair amount of hesitancy in doctors and nurses. Do you believe that they took vaccination out of the doctor's hands sometimes simply because they didn't want them to talk about risk
reward
to patients and not have them be vaccinated
because
the doctor basically said you don't need it?
Well, I think there's no question that part of what they did, they said, we can streamline this. You know, we don't want to clog up your office. We don't want you to have to be troubled making appointments to see and have to counsel all these people. But I think
we also don't want you counseling all these people.
Exactly. We don't want you counseling all these people.
Right.
We don't want you to be, because, you know, when people are in a line and they're in their car and they're in a queue,
that's right.
And it's, you know, you're in the drive, when you're in the drive-through at McDonald's, you don't take time to ask quite a lot of questions, to review the menu again, to do this. It is very clear that you are intended to get your thing and move on. And that's when you provide that assembly line, so people adopt that, and they don't ask a lot of questions. When people, on the other hand, in contradistinction, when people make a doctor's appointment, go in and sit down, they fully expect to ask and have their questions answered. So, yes, I think the federal government, clearly that there was some part of it that was saying, don't give these people a chance to go and sit down and ask a lot of questions.
Great
Just
point.
Roll your sleeve up, go through the drive-thru.
Great point. And, you know, because, guys, and Dr. Kelly, this I'll ask you quick, and Steve, you can chime back in on this as well. When you're in a doctor's office or, you know, you've been diagnosed with something, let's use, you know, cancer for an example. And a lot of folks will say, well, John, COVID isn't the same as cancer. Well, you know, hold on. It might actually be down the road. I don't know if anybody can answer that quite yet. But the reality is when you've got cancer and you're sitting talking to a doctor, and by the way, I've been through this with family members, so I know how this works firsthand. They give you all sorts of options as to what you have available to you and what some of the different outcomes would be, including, Dr. Kelly, if we do nothing, this is what you probably can expect. On the same token, we have this treatment, that treatment, we can do this, that drug, blah, 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 blah. And you end up with this sort of litany of things that are at your fingertips now that you can choose from as to what you want to do. And by the way, key word there, that you can choose from as to how you want to proceed. And Dr. Kelly, you're a doctor. If I'm wrong in any of this, please correct me.
No, that is exactly right. You, number one, should be given all of the options and of what the outcome will be. It's what we call the, and then also do that risk-benefit calculation.
Right, right.
So you should have expected, and I guarantee you that nobody did that risk-benefit calculation in line, in the parking lot, or at the Walgreens, or at the grocery store, or at their local school that ran a vaccine drive. Did anyone sit down and counsel you? Given your age, given your comorbidities, given your underlying risk, your individual overall risk of contracting COVID, and if you do, having a bad outcome of it, and let's weigh that against this list of possible complications and risks from the vaccine. Nobody did that. I the entire concept of informed consent and calculation went out the window.
Right.
And so you're right. No one should be going, now I've said this from the beginning, this doesn't pertain simply to vaccines. You should be doing this whether you're talking about starting on a new antibiotic, a chemotherapy regimen, a surgical intervention, any of those things. We don't simply say to a patient, here's your only choice, take it or leave it.
Steve, I really feel like what Dr. Kelly, really quick, Steve, I feel like what Dr. Kelly just said, you know, alluding back to what you referring to, and I think you're right, by the way, where these consultations were done, let's face it, consultations were done on social media, around the water cooler at work, at school, in front of the television set. Do you get my drift, Steve? In other words, the consultations weren't done by people that really had even strong evidence and the medical background to even make these consultations. They were done by other various means, which, by the way, I think were done on purpose through our own government.
Yeah, and you know what, John? There was one place you missed, right? The one place they weren't done that you should have been done was on social media. There should have been an ability for people to share their thoughts, yeah, to share their information on social media. I mean, if you had a true consultation and you took with you the data we saw from the very beginning regarding people under the age of 50, and especially children under the age of 18, no child under 18 would have been vaccinated,
true,
you know, by any parent.
Great point.
I mean, you know, yeah, maybe there were some extreme examples, but it's just a handful. I mean, the last time we talked about this, a month ago, there still hadn't been really a child in America who died straight up of COVID. I mean,
right,
it just doesn't happen.
Right.
So why give them a vaccine when you know spike proteins go to their liver, their brain, their testicles, their ovaries, all these places that are potentially going to damage them? And a lot of these kids, they may never know until, you know, something bad happens to their health and they can't explain it, what actually happened. So, yeah, consultations would have stopped a lot of childhood vaccines and certainly anybody under the age of 50 in reasonable health.
It goes back to, Kelly, where we've talked many times, and I'll keep saying it. I've lost so much faith in the medical community because of a lot of what's happened. And by the way, I'm not blaming the doctors and the folks that you're talking about a moment ago that most likely would have advised their patients differently. I'm talking about the overarching medical community, the individual czars, the folks that are running, the entire organizations, those that were at the top, which, by the way, frankly, in a lot of cases, including health departments in cities and counties across this country that probably haven't seen a patient in eons. These were the folks making all the decisions of our health, which, by the way, is not the way it ought to work.
Well, no, it isn't. But you are more forgiving than I, John, with regard to individual physicians. I don't give people such an easy pass. At a time of great crisis, yes, we need to be able to rely on our public health officials, and it's reasonable to turn to the CDC, the FDA, the World Health Organization, and people, the Surgeon General. But given the data that was rolling in, and given how new these things were, these vaccines were, and given conflict and the conflicting data that was coming in, I do hold individual physicians responsible for simply copying this attitude of, I simply did what I was told. What the American Academy of Pediatrics told me I needed to do because otherwise they were going to threaten my medical license. Well, you know what? That's not a pass. It's not a pass for anybody to simply say, I don't care if you're a soldier, a police officer or a physician, you don't get to say, I did the wrong thing because I was simply doing what I was told and I didn't want to lose my license.
That's a great point.
You signed up to, quote, first do no harm. That's the oath you took.
You're right. No, that applies to so many other different industries and things that go awry that shouldn't, that you are, I stand corrected. You are spot on. A lot of these folks shouldn't get the pass that a lot of us probably are giving them. I guess I'm looking at it thinking, well, it's their practice and, so on and so forth. But, you're right. Really, at the end of the day, Dr. Kelly, why didn't more of them even stand up together and say, wait a minute, time out. This is outlandish. I wouldn't be telling my patients to go do X, Y, and Z. But there were very few and far. I know there's a few out there. We've even interviewed some on this program. So there's a few out there that did that, but not near enough.
Exactly. And that's my point. I think the physicians who have not bothered or have not risked asking questions, who have not said, wait a minute, I'm not, like what I've said, I'm not anti-vaccine, but I have never in my life suggested or promoted a treatment, vaccine or otherwise, to a group of people on whom it's never been tested.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend an antibiotic or an antihypertensive or an arthritis medication, for example, to a pregnant woman once I knew that the drug had never been tested on pregnant women.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
You are violating the fundamental concept,
yep,
number one, of first do no harm.
Yep. You're right. Steve, producer Ann, who also said this: the government basically messed with people's ecosystems to the point, a fear, if you would, including the psychology behind it, to where so many of them just wanted the jab because they thought, key word here, they thought and were told it would somehow save them, right?
Well, yeah, I think that's part of it. I think it's part of what Kelly was talking about with medicalists. So doctors were going to lose their jobs and their careers, and you know, people who worked in professions who had to be vaccinated were going to lose their jobs. I mean, you put that kind of pressure, that force from government on them, that makes it a really, really crazy, difficult decision. I was fortunate that I didn't work in a scenario where I had to be vaccinated.
Me neither.
Because I never, I don't know what I would have done, John. Right. I probably would have changed jobs, changed industries. I have so much disdain for this vaccine, and there are so many pieces of evidence that it's bad, and it is bad, in my opinion.
I agree.
Very bad. And quite frankly, when you think about a million people in the U.S. dying, trillions of dollars of lost revenue, businesses, thousands, tens of thousands of businesses going out of business, you know, people's lifetime dreams over something where a million people still died. The vaccine really didn't work. Anybody who thinks the vaccine worked, it did not work. I mean, you can tell by the data today.
No.
And so where was the victory in this in any of it?
I look at it quite the opposite. It's not only is it not a victory, Steve and Dr. Kelly, in my opinion, it's a huge defeat, because I don't think, we'll talk about this, take a break, come back and talk about this. So both of you think about this. I know nobody has a crystal ball, but I feel like it's a defeat because we don't even know what's yet to come. And I'm afraid there's a lot more repercussions from what we've done coming down the pike. And we can talk about that here in just one moment. Guys, hang tight. If you got a question for Dr. Kelly Victory or Steve House, please text me 307-200-8222. Again, 307-200-8222. 8222. All right, welcome back. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. This first hour of every Thursday, Dr. Kelly Victory and Steve House join us. And, again, real quick, Dr. Kelly Victory, we'll start with you. The aftermath of all of this, and I know that nobody has a crystal ball, yourself, I, or Steve, but you know, what are things that you anticipate down the road that you feel may be huge repercussions of all of these jabs we've now been getting for the past roughly year?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you posed it that way, John, because I think you have to parse out there are going to be huge negative effects that we're going to feel for a long time from things as simple, quote unquote, as simple as these mask mandates. We've talked about the impact on kids, the huge financial and economic and psychosocial impacts of the lockdowns and all of that. The vaccines are their own bucket of disaster. I fear that we are only seeing the tip of the iceberg in these increased, not only all-cause mortality rates that are happening, not only in the United States, but in other countries that are highly vaccinated, but also this uptick in certain classes of medical conditions. The ones we're seeing the most, I've rattled off before, are things like blood clots, specifically blood clots to the lung and the brain. We're seeing increased incidence of cardiac issues, not just incidentally myocarditis and pericarditis, but these new and really troubling atypical chest pain, atypical heart rhythms. I, in my own family, my own direct family, have three previously healthy individuals who are now debilitated with cardiac issues with no explanation.
Wow.
One of them is a 25-year-old, okay? 25-year-old, previously healthy, you know, uber athlete, track star in college, who now has these troubling dysrhythmias. So that, I think, neurologic issues. It will be decades before we can really get our arms around whether or not there is a fertility impact.
Yeah, that's right.
So while we cannot... with any certainty of, you know, unless somebody has anaphylaxis and, you know, it develops an allergic reaction within minutes or hours of getting the injection, it's almost impossible to tie a specific adverse event to the vaccine. But that's where epidemiology comes into play. That's where you say, yes, I can't say that one did, but I sure as heck can say if we have a 40% increase in blood clots to the lung, or a 400% increase in female infertility, or a blank increase in myocarditis in, you know, people under the age of 22, then that's how epidemiology works. You've got to look and say, what is the thing that changed?
That's right. What event
happened? Prior to the onset of, what event happened?
That's right.
And we can look at all of them.
That's right.
And then we can try to figure out, was it global warming? You know, was it mask wearing? Was it, you know, whatever thing happened and that actually resulted in this, because they are not going to be able to hide the bodies forever.
Steve, and you and I both know that when it comes to all sorts of things, especially in the business world, when there are upticks in certain things data-wise, at least in my world, critical thinking says you go back and you look at what, to Dr. Kelly's point, you look at what changed, what event happened, you know, what new item was introduced at this particular time. It doesn't matter whether we're making widgets or we're talking about, you know, people's health. That's how you interpret data. My question, Steve, is will that happen moving forward? Because frankly, right now, I'm not sure it will.
Yeah, I think that's true, John. I'm not sure it will either. But there's another piece to what Kelly said. You know, there's the things we know about right now. We don't have as much proof. Autopsies are starting to give us proof. But the thing I worry about is we know that virtually everything they told us about the vaccine, starting with it'll leave your cells after a short period of time. You know,
right.
It's an envelope. It's, you know, RNA is going in there. It's going to leave. The spike protein won't leave your arm. The vaccine will keep you from dying. It'll keep you from transmitting the disease. So none of those
It'll keep you from getting COVID, Steve. Don't forget that one.
Right.
So take all of that untruth and go back to the beginning, right? So we put something in people's body that went into their cell and changed their DNA now. We've seen that, right? So what all the things that are happening, myocarditis and potentially cancers and, you know, tinnitus and all these other symptoms that are happening, what I worry about is what are the deeper impacts of those cell changes, of those spike proteins lingering a year from now, 2 years from now.
Right.
I mean, it may just be more of what we're seeing right now, but we have a big unknown. And I don't know if you're a doctor. I don't know how your diagnostic process is going to go now. You're going to go through the same process to say, hey, John's got a left lower quadrant pain. You know, let's look at a kidney or a spleen. But, you know, figuring out what happened to you when it doesn't tie back to your genetics, you know, how do genetics come into play now that we've had this vaccine? Is it going to alter that? People who didn't have cancer in their family now do. Is it going to carry through multiple generations? I mean, there's all these problems for healthcare as a result of that.
Right.
All of them.
Right. Text message, by the way. Go ahead, Dr. Kelly. Go ahead.
To say the other thing that I think you touched on, John, is really important for people to understand. You hear all the time, people say, well, you know, where's the study that says that the vaccines aren't safe? Where's the real science isn't about waiting for a randomized controlled trial study.
Right.
Real science is the power of observation.
Right.
Real scientists look at patterns, at data that's coming in. They look at an anomaly and they say, wow, that is really weird.
Right.
Why are we seeing this all of a sudden? Real science forces you, doesn't just allow you to ask questions. It demands it. It demands that I, as a physician, say, whoa, we have seen a really unusual increase in the incidence of brain abscesses. Why would that be? Could it? And then you say, what's something that's changed that all
that's
of a sudden,
right,
before we started seeing a huge increase in brain abscesses, what changed? Well, I can rattle off a number of things. It's not just the vaccine or wearing masks. How about shoving Q-tips up people's noses?
Right, right.
You know, several times a week. I don't know. Maybe that has something to do with it. I'm not saying I can prove that it does, but I'm saying I'm obligated to ask the question.
This is no different. I know this is going to sound really, really simplistic to a lot of folks, but I'm come from the, as you guys all know, the car world where we fixed cars for years and years and years, and I still help people today do that, consult others that do it continually. And I will tell you this, guys, that back in my day, even as a technician, when somebody would come in with a hard-to-fix problem, maybe they'd been to two or three or four other facilities, and they ended up at mine because we were known for fixing things, frankly, nobody else could. And I think, frankly, guys, because I was the type of technician, not bragging, but, you know, we would ask these types of questions, Steve and Dr. Kelly, on, you know, what happened in your world with your vehicle? Give me all the events that led up to X, Y, and Z happening. I mean, it's no different no matter what industry, guys, we're talking about. You critically think back to what changed, what happened, you know, what made us get to where we are today. Let's go back and see if we can't determine what that is, because that'll give us an idea of why we're here now and why we have these existing results. This is just not a medical way of doing things, Dr. Kelly. This is just how life works.
No, and they've really changed, unfortunately, John. So many people have lost that ability. When I was in medical school and in training, and I'm dating myself because no one does it this way now, we were taught that if you take a good history, if you sit down and you talk to the patient and you take a good history, 90% of the time you'll have the diagnosis before you ever put your hand on them.
That's right.
Okay? Because if you actually listen and they tell you, this is what happened, I did, and then I developed this symptom and that symptom, you will know if you listen. But instead, in today's world, we just start shotgunning, you know, ordering tests, ordering CAT scans and MRIs, you know, and you know, consulting people rather than actually listening to the history. And if we look at that now with the data that are coming in, and we look and say, what happened? What was the chronology?
Mm-hmm.
I promise you, and this is the answer to your question, what are we going to see down the road? What we're going to see is a whole lot of increases in conditions that had been really relatively rare.
Steve, I want to add something to what Dr. Kelly just said. You know, you'll appreciate this. What's interesting, too, is all the folks that Dr. Kelly just said are the same folks that will whine and complain at an auto shop that fixes the car exactly the way they treat patients with that shotgun approach, Steve.
Yeah, exactly. And I would whine about that, too, John. But here's the other thing, too, that I think you guys are both touching on is I'm a data and analytics guy in healthcare.
Right.
So I look at this and say, okay, I want to take what we know now, and I want to take it from autopsies. I want to take it from, you know, conditions, from tracking how many people have myocarditis, how many people have higher D-dimers, how many blood clot problems in the brain are they, and I want to forecast going forward. Just the way I would have forecasted, you know, a rise in type 2 diabetes based on what was happening with BMIs, a rise in Alzheimer's based on what we knew about aging. You know, you can forecast it, you can prepare for it, you can research and work on things to help solve those problems. But we cut off looking at why people were getting these diseases or what the actual impact was.
That's right.
We have not done a lot of autopsies. We have not tracked and placed intelligent research on why are there so many people with blood clots? Why are there so many people with myocarditis? We know instinctively, Kelly knows, but the system, public health, HHS, doctors and hospitals, need better information, and we're suppressing it because if we didn't suppress it, no one would get vaccinated.
This comment that just came in, by the way, applies exactly, Steve, to what you just said a moment ago. Shame on the doctors and other medical professionals who have purposely blocked patients from the medical care and information that could have helped them. Question is, can anything be done to correct these misguided acts? And I'm going to add one thing to it. Can anything be done to correct this from happening in the future? Dr. Kelly, I'll start with you.
Well, the answer is there are many, many people, attorneys and physicians, who are working in concert to hold people accountable for the fact that harm was done. Harm was done to patients by the FDA, by the CDC, state medical boards, the Federation of State Medical Boards, pharmacy boards, people who not only limited the ability of physicians to talk about the pros and cons of different treatments, to prescribe those treatments off-label, to undergo or to help walk patients through that critical risk-benefit calculation that I was talking about, many people were harmed. And yes, they are looking, we are looking at whether or not class action lawsuits can be brought against everybody from the FDA to the CDC to state medical boards. There are physicians today who are fighting for their licenses, fighting to keep their livelihoods, fighting not to be disciplined by state medical boards for doing something as simple as suggesting to a patient that maybe they didn't need a vaccine or that maybe they should try an alternative therapy, meaning the prescription of medications off-label, which is something that doctors have done, you know, from the beginning of time. So it hasn't happened yet. I believe, frankly, that that's what needs to happen. I think we need class action lawsuits. Specifically, John, so that this doesn't happen again. Because the only thing that keeps this from happening is if somebody is held ultimately accountable. Right now, we've got the opposite going. We've got the Biden administration threatening to sign on to the World Health Organization's suggest that they're, what they have promoted, what they've presented, in the words of Dr. Tedros, the head of the World Health Organization, one planet, one health. They are trying to make it that any World Health Organization member, any country that's a member of the WHO, will sign on to say, in the case of a global emergency, health emergency, or a public health crisis, including a pandemic, that all member nations will agree to follow the guidance of the World Health Organization and supplant their own constitution. In other words, if the World Health Organization says vaccines are mandatory for everybody, then the United States and every other World Health Organization nation is going to agree to do that. The Biden administration is in support, believe it or not, of signing this absolute atrocity. It would be disastrous for us, and it would put us fully, you know, under the control and at the whim of the people who run the WHO.
Go ahead, Steve. Go ahead.
And you know what? Joe Biden would do an executive order if he had to
get. Yeah, true.
Nobody flies domestically without a vaccine. And Kelly, I think the other thing doctors have suffered and we're all suffering from is that doctors are not allowed to be heard. I mean, if I really wanted to find
Absolutely.
Out you know, from you, you know, look, if I had the vaccine and I wanted to say, what do I do to counter some of the negative effects that are potential on my body? You can't tweet that to me. You can't put it on social media because it will be considered to be misinformation.
I
can't hear you. I can't hear Peter McCullough. I can't hear all these guys. You're just not allowed.
That's right.
It's crazy.
That's right. One last question, guys. This one might take a little bit of time, but I get this one a lot, by the way. So this is one we need to answer. Dr. Kelly Victory, what are the clinical tests that can be cited that assess the efficacy of masks, or in my opinion, the non-effectiveness of masks?
There really are no compelling studies that show the efficacy of masks against respiratory viruses. In fact, we have 400 studies posted, 400, you heard that correctly, posted on the website earlycovidcare.org that actually proved the opposite, proved that masks either do absolutely nothing to stop the transmission of respiratory viruses or very little, and that the benefits of wearing them do not outweigh the multiple downsides. We know that the masks have had a horrible deleterious effects on children, that based on the small size of their faces and their lower expiratory velocity, that they trap carbon dioxide. It's why children very quickly suffer from headaches and difficulty concentrating, anxiety, and those sorts of things. We know now from the data that's come in and from studies that have been done around the world that there's been a huge impact, negative, on children's ability to learn to speak, on their neurologic development, on, you know, they've scored more, you know, poorly on cognitive tests all around. We know in this country that children are more than a year and a half now delayed academically. Scores are in the gutter right now for kids. So while there are no compelling studies that talk about masks being effective, there are hundreds that show that they aren't.
Okay. And by the way, folks, all of that information is on our website, rushtoreason.com. Just look for, in fact, she's got a pop-up on there right now for some of the things we've talked about here the last few weeks. So it's really easy to find Dr. Kelly on the website. Just go to rushtoreason.com and it's all there. Guys, we've got a couple of minutes left. Steve, I'll give you a word. And then Kelly, of course, being, the female and she was on first, she gets to go off last as well. So what do you got left for, Steve?
So I've been looking for evidence that especially the Health and Human Services folks, the CDC and FDA, are getting smarter the longer we've had COVID around. And, you know, this past week we found out they're not only not getting smarter, they're actually potentially getting dumber with the re-up of the mask mandate on airplanes, because the filters on airplanes, first and foremost, are the best there are. Secondly, there have been no major outbreaks because of airplanes, none. So why do you walk around the airport wearing a mask, get on an airplane where you have complete filtration and have to keep wearing a mask, and the stupidity that goes with it? I'll tell you what, I got a secret this week from somebody that has been doing this for almost 2 years now. He carries around a Tootsie Pop everywhere he doesn't want to wear a mask. He puts it in his mouth and just keeps it in there and sucks on it. He's eating, so he doesn't have to wear a mask.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to wear a mask, you might want to try that, because apparently it does work.
Dr. Kelly, I give you the last word. We got a minute.
Well, again, I would just suggest that people continue to try to educate themselves as much as they can in this very highly censored world. And part of what that means is go take the time to find the reports from Pfizer. Take the time to get that data that was released as a result of our FOIA request. Look at what it was that the FDA had in their hands in February of 2021 when they made the decision somehow, absolutely inexplicably, that vaccine was safe. You look, your average layperson can read that document and would say, how the heck did they ever, after reading this document, come to the conclusion that this thing was safe? ask yourself and truly take the time, because the information is out there, albeit difficult, always to find, and you can find a lot of it at earlycovidcare.org.
Dr. Kelly Victory, Steve House, thank you both very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
You bet.
Thanks.
Take care, guys. Have a great week, and be safe coming home, Dr. Kelly and Steve. This is John Rush from Rush to Reason and Drive Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Check out more of our podcasts at rushtoreason.com or drive-radio.com.